Om Shanti. Today we're given the subject of going into the depth of and finding out what we really mean by, what Baba really means by these two words, transformation and determination. So I think a good thing to do is to look at ourselves and our situation from a number of angles. And when you look at something from one angle, it looks difficult, impossible, etc. And sometimes simply by looking at it from a different angle, it's a whole different situation altogether. So I think this is good. Also, number of perspectives. It doesn't really matter in which order. But one thing is that we are assigned by God to transform the world. Is this correct? Yeah. There is a destined event, and the event is the transformation of the world, and God is the commander-in-chief of world transformation. He is the CEO of world transformation, and he has selected us out of all the possible people in the world as being the ones who not only can do this but also will do this, and so it's fixed. I think that sometimes our problem is simply one of doubt. We think that it can't be done because we look at ourselves and we look at our record and we see that we all have one or two sanskaras that are quite tough and they don't seem to look like changing at all. And we look at those and we might decide, no, we have probably about a couple of hundred like that. And that's it. Don't think it's possible. Am I right? Yes? Yes? Yes. So, if it couldn't be done, we wouldn't have been hired. Is it right? God is not an idiot. Is it? Yes? No? Yeah? Definitely. He knows what he's doing. He does it every 5,000 years, has been doing it for zillions of kalpas. And each and every kalpa, we have been the ones who actually transformed the world. Am I right? No? Yes? Is the kalpa repeating identically or differently? Identically, right? Yes? No? Yes? We are BKs? No? Yes? So this is an analytical process, especially designed to enable us to actually set aside the doubts based on perception. Because our faith is not in the least bit based on perception. Perception through our sense organs, I, the soul, through my sense organs, observe my behavior and conclude that there's no way. Right? Yes? Is it right? Is it true? Yes? Yes? Anybody know? Yeah, right. So, the one thing that we have to be very, very sure about is that our sense perceptions are deceptive. Is it correct? There's a little thing from Albert Einstein in which he says that our sense perceptions are useful for telling us about the everyday world, but they're useless when it comes to anything cosmic. So is world transformation part of the everyday world, or is it perhaps something cosmic? What do you think? Cosmic? Everyday? No, eh? On an everyday basis, the transformation of the world is 100% not possible. Is this right? We speculate, we say we can have a 15-point earthquake and that'll do it, but it's still a nice idea. It's a cosmic thing. There's nothing everyday about it. So we need to use our understanding, our powers of analysis, to distinguish very clearly between the everyday reality of ordinary BK ways and then the cosmic reality that I, the soul, have been hired by God to transform the world, just as I had done in the previous kalpa and will do in this kalpa and also in the next kalpa. Correct? Yes? Anybody want to... I don't think it's possible to give in your resignation. Is it? Huh? You have to speak louder. I've got the mic. No chance. You can be fined. That's all. You get... Fined means you... don't complete the settlement of your karmic accounts, so you pay for that. That's okay. Because all it is extreme and severe pain. Now, from the ordinary everyday reality of our sense perceptions, extreme and severe pain is a very big deal, correct? Some of you may have had to go through it. If not, you will. But once you've been there, done that, got the t-shirt, as it were, and you shift into your more cosmic mode in regard to those things, you begin to understand something, and that is that if you use your power of tolerance, then extreme and severe pain is just another doorway. Nothing more than that. Because as soon as you detach from your body, then the question of the limitations of sense perception is just in a small box. And it's not the totality of everything. Do you see what I mean? So the different various tests that come in front of us exist purely to take us to an extreme point so that we move out of the mundane reality of everyday sense perception into a different reality where you're beyond the sense perceptions and you start to use your third eye, your knowledge of the cycle, your divine intellect, and then the thinking processes are different. So in that case, I suppose the biggest problem that we face is actually doubt. Doubt. Is it? Yeah. Because if God says something, it's true, right? Would he say something that isn't true and still be God? Is it possible? No, eh? This much we figured out. So if he says, you, individually, collectively, are hired to do this job of world transformation, and then your response to that, in terms of spirituality, is, it is done. Is that right? It is done. This is how we say, it is done. Then we go and do it. But we say, it is done, and then we proceed to do it. Is that the way? Yes? Yes or no? Yes, huh? And then he keeps on telling us your instruments. Can a violin say to Itzhak Perlman, I don't think... yeah. Can it? I don't think you can play me. Yeah. Regardless of the capacity of the violin, if it's Itzhak Perlman playing it, something good will come out. Of course, there are variations, but the player counts a lot more than the instrument. Is this right? Yes? So whether you're a good instrument or not, does it matter? Does it? Little bit, but not how much. Yeah, small amount. So then he says, okay, since you are already world transformers, can you not transform yourself? So logically, of course, it's obvious you can. We have been going by change the self and then you change the world, making changing the world predicated on our capacity to change ourself, which is in question. So therefore this equation of change the self to change the world is less powerful. So he's given us a different equation, that since anyway you are the world changers, changing the self is included in that. It's a given, it's fixed. Is it? Different equation. You have changed the world, so many millions and trillions of kalpas, and the way you did it was by changing yourself. So just one more time, change the self. So first thing I think that's important is to remove the doubt. And the doubt exists insofar as we're thinking of ourselves on the basis of everyday reality through our five senses, where we look at our behavior and we find it full of mistakes and endless failures and so on and so forth. That's only everyday reality, nothing more, nothing less. So we have to keep it in perspective and move out of that into a more cosmic sense of the self. So then another perspective to consider refers to a story about Hanuman. You all know who Hanuman is. He is the symbol of Brahma Baba. Yes? You went to Dilvara Temple and you saw one statue who is called Mahavir, the great warrior. So an Adidev, Mahavir, Hanuman, I think they all three were together in the Murli today, yes? Did you see that? No? It was. Anyway, so Adidev is Brahma Baba, Mahavir, the great warrior, and Hanuman, the monkey. And what Baba had said is that what the monkey has to lose is his tail in terms of this eye. I do not think I can do it, that type of eye. So the thing about Hanuman is that he was condemned to be an ordinary monkey who was unaware of his powers, and he would remain like that until he met Ram. And when he met Ram, he would remember what his powers are, and then he could do the work of rescuing Sita and catching Lanka on fire with his tail, which presumably burned along with Lanka, right? So, I cannot calculate, this I is the thing that creates the doubt. You know, I perceive the reality of me through my sense perceptions and find that what Baba is saying is probably referring to some other BK. Is it so? And so this is the ordinary monkey. Monkey means a human being with five vices who has not yet met God, simply. And so when we're in that ordinary perception, seeing reality through our sense perceptions, the reality of the self, then it's as if we haven't met God. And so there is doubt. And so we cannot use our powers. We don't know that we have our powers. So the thing that I think Baba was telling us this time is to become aware of what we are and who we are. I don't know if you've ever had this sentence coming out of your mouth for someone, and you say, "You don't know who I am." Have you done that? Have you said that? Anybody? And when you say directly or just in your mind, "You don't know who I am," do you also say, "Yeah, I also don't know who I am"? Is it? So, we don't know who we are. Though he is telling us every day in many, many ways who we are, we doubt. And we doubt because we see and we evaluate and we judge through our sense perceptions, because this is, after all, the scientific method. It's not possible to apply the scientific method without your sense perceptions, because you would not know whether your experiment is getting repeated if you didn't see it, right? So coming away from the sense perceptions means we can only use calculation. We can only really use mathematics and logic. Mathematics and logic are nice because they're nothing to do with sense perception. And so they're very useful for people who are bodiless. If you're bodiless and you're combined with God, theoretically, anything is possible. And so all we have to do is change it from theoretically possible to practically possible. Now, there is a lot of the impact of the old sanskaras of religion that affect people even after they've been in Gyan for a very long time. Very long time. And one of the sanskaras that one acquires in religion is the sense of the self as unworthy. Anybody? Unworthy. Yeah, this is a mistake. Also the sense of the self as I'm basically a sinner, probably going to hell. Yes. Heaven, yes, but I'm wanting to go to heaven, but probably I'm going to hell. Yes? Doubt, you know. Because the external authorities of religion are bound in this belief system that if a person has a lot of self-doubt, that's better. I see. Because if you have a lot of self-doubt, then, you know, you'll be more humble and you'll have more faith in God and you'll be more afraid of evil and this sort of thing. And so we have fear of failure, we have fear of God, we have fear of all sorts of things because we've been taught like that. So these sanskaras are in there. These are acquired sanskaras. And they get in the way of being successful in this area of acceptance of who I am and what I am. And so here am I. I have to remove the sense of I. You remember the three I's. One eye is I am everything, the other eye is I am nothing, and the third eye is I am a dot. And so a dot is something that you can only conceive of. You can't actually experience yourself as a dot. Am I right? Yes? Because anyway, when you're in the soul world, there's no question of experience, because experience, there is inner experience. But a lot of our sense of experience has to do with our sense perceptions. You know, did you see the light? You can't see the light without eyes. Whether any light comes in front of you or not, you know there is light. Yes? But you doubt, because you can't see. Yes? So this is the big problem, is the doubt. And so faith in the self, faith in God, faith in our success, is a lot to do with this calculation, this analysis of the knowledge. Because after all, we have one thing that has been certified by God, and that is that we have love for God. Yes? Everybody have love for God? We say, no, I don't think so. I don't have love for God. I don't feel it, therefore it's not there. Is that correct? How many people, I don't love God? One or two. How many people feel intense love for God 24 hours a day? No, it's not possible. If you would, you'd be leaving the body. And if you say you are, we would suspect. You may be not telling the truth, or you don't know how to calculate. You know? So there are moments when you actually feel your love for God. Is that correct? And if you feel it once for a microsecond, it means it's there. Because if it wasn't there, you wouldn't have that experience. You know. I think it's also connected with this moment of recognition of God. There's a moment when you get it, right? Yes? Well, not when you get it, but when you got it. Sometimes you get it again. But it only takes a moment to recognize. And these are peak moments, you see. So most of the time we stay in everyday reality because we're in our bodies and we're on the earth. And so we need to make a distinction between knowing that most of the time we're in everyday reality and also knowing that we are fixed to transform the world regardless of whether it seems that way or not. Is this right? So the knowing is the thing that has to destroy the doubt. When you experience doubt, why do you experience doubt? It's an experience, right? And it's a factor of body consciousness. What is body consciousness? Not knowing. You know, this expression, pata nahi. You must have heard it. I don't know. You must have said it. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I'll make it. I don't know if I'm one of the 108. I don't know if I'm one of the 8. I don't know if I'm, you know, take full 84 births or maybe 83, you know, this kind of, I don't know. This is doubt. You do know very well that theoretically you're 84 births. Theoretically you're golden-aged sovereigns, etc., etc. Yes? And so if Baba says one thing, that's true, then all the other things also have to be true. Because he can't tell you some things that are true and some things that are not true. He can tell you some things that you can understand and other things that you can't quite figure out. That's a different matter. But he can't tell you some things that are true, and the things that you can't figure out is because they're not true. Is it? No, it's because you haven't figured it out yet, that's all. Nothing more. You see? So suppose you say, okay, I have to be perfect, right? Everybody says that, yes? And you have an idea of what perfect is. It should be like this and it shouldn't be like that and blah, 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 right? And so this is known as, in psychological terms, a setup for failure. It's a classic, you see. You should know this. It's well known. And you create a scenario in your mind where you are 100% bound to fail so that you can prove to yourself that you're just an ordinary human being. Yes? It works like that. Baba says, be constantly in my remembrance. Yes? And then you say, okay, being constantly in Baba's remembrance means this, 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 this. You can have 108 points for that. And then if you're not in any one of those, according to your calculation, you're a failure. Right? This is known as the setup. So we have to just observe ourselves, not from the sense perception perspective, but from a different perspective, the understanding, perspective of understanding, so that instead of creating a setup in your mind using waste thoughts, a setup for self-failure, you create a different setup for success. And this is called determination. If he says the truth, and he says, I'm a world transformer, and therefore why can I not transform myself? Obviously, I can. But then comes the question, not the question of the doubt whether or not I can transform myself, but what exactly does it mean, transform myself? You see? So we have to have, I think, a very refined conscience. This is an instrument within the self that enables us to actually notice when we do something that isn't right. And then we also have to see within ourselves to what extent we want to do things that are not right. Because Baba had said also, I think it was in today's Murli, or maybe in the one in New Year's Eve, you actually like Maya. Some extent. There's a certain amount of compulsion, inner compulsion for certain things, not being ready to give up certain things because there isn't quite clarity, there isn't quite faith that this is correct. There are two things. One is morality and the other is ethics. Very, very widely different things. But one of the problems in the world today we have found is that people make no distinction between morality and ethics. But there is an interesting distinction that we make in the Value Education program, which is helpful. And morality is something that people decided. It's good or it's bad. Or we do this or we don't do this. And it varies from person to person, from group to group, from time to time. And within the Brahmin family, there's a lot of varying moralities. But ethics doesn't vary, you see. Because ethics is not decided upon by a group of people or a majority or anything like that. It either is really right or it really isn't right. And you can't calculate it on the basis of the majority of people agree with it, therefore it's ethically correct. No, the majority of people want it this particular way, therefore it's morally right. And many, many things are morally right, but they're not ethically right. And so this opposition, internal inability for the two things to gel with each other, makes it difficult for people to perform ethical reasoning, which is something that you do in your conscience. And your conscience is a very important instrument, acting like a sensor, so that you can know whether something is right or wrong, which is nothing to do with what the moral majority says. But it's an inner sensor that enables you to know whether something is really right or not. And it's very, very subtle. When you have waste thoughts, or when you have doubt, or when you do not think highly of yourself, then this sensor becomes dysfunctional, or it loses functionality, and then you can't rely on it. Then you have to rely on externally developed morals, which are very unreliable. So this inner sensor of the conscience is a very important instrument to develop. And I think one of the most important initial preparations for that is to make it very clear for yourself that God is not in the least bit concerned about whether you're good or bad. You know, and the religion will tell you that God likes you better if you're good and doesn't like you much if you're bad. And so you're always trying to look good and avoid looking bad because of this preoccupation with sense perceptions. It makes us feel that if I look good to me, then I'm also going to look good to God and also to the other people. This is all about a sense perception. But once you understand very clearly that God is completely unconcerned about whether you're good or bad, and have remotely any interest in that. I think this is useful because it allows you to give up that compulsion to, or that almost an addiction that I have to think that I'm not perfect. Isn't it? It's a strong moral principle in a number of cultures that if you think that you're not perfect, it means that you're all right. And if you think that you're perfect, it means that you're not all right. Religion. It comes from religion, because the religions are the religions are the buildings, congregations, books, comments, systems, setups, and formulas, you see. And the formula that you get very often is, if you think you're perfect, it means you're not. And if you think you're not perfect, it means you probably are, you see. In other words, it's a special training to prevent you from thinking at all. And when you don't think, then you can easily be manipulated. Whereas it seems to me that Baba is not at all interested in manipulating people like that. It's a very human type of behavior, not at all a godly behavior. He doesn't operate that way. Yes, whether it doesn't matter what your religion is, they'll find a way to make it very difficult to be logical. I see. Whereas Baba says, I am God. Yes? Yes, you are God. You're a soul. Yes? Yes, I'm a soul. And so I know what is right and wrong. Yes? And I'm here to basically melt all the religions because they're man-made. And they're man-made after the beginning of the Copper Age. Therefore, they're mixed with a combination of assumptions, perceptions, miraculous occurrences, and interpretations based on a tamopradhan or a rajasic intellect. And because of that, they are, by definition, away from the exact truth. And as time goes on, they become further and further away. And so when he gives us this mantra, forget your body, forget your bodily relations, forget your bodily religion, and remember me. What it means is, disconnect yourself from your socialization. That means your upbringing from your parents and from your teachers and from your religious leaders, because they will give you morality, but they won't give you ethics. I see. And so what I have found is it's very useful to distinguish between these two, because it allows us to drop things that are that were given to us and that we accepted in good faith. They were given to us in good faith by people who really thought that this would be good, but it wasn't. So once you realize that God doesn't care at all whether you're good or bad, and he would like you to also have the same relationship with yourself. Because once you become neutral about whether you're good or bad, then you can get on with being real. And there was a very important murli that Baba gave, I think the last one of the last season, in which he just dropped a bombshell. That would you please stop being preoccupied with right and wrong? Do you remember that? This right and wrong seems to me very much involved in morality. Who says what's right and wrong? On what basis? You see? With what intention? You know? These questions you have to ask. It means things that come from the outside are known in Gyan as Parmat. You know, we have these three things, Srimat, Parmat, and Manmat, you see. And Dadi Jenki used to talk about this quite a lot. And the way she used to describe it is that Manmat and Parmat are pretty much the same. You get told a variety of things from outside, from parents, teachers, and religious authorities. These are the three major influences on all of us, you see. And that's called morality. Do this, don't do that, do like this, don't do like that, all this kind of thing, you see. And then you get Srimat, which is totally different from what the rest of the world thinks is right or wrong. For example, he says, see only the virtues in people. There is no kind of morality like that. They say, if it's right, then think it's right, and if it's wrong, then think it's wrong. So they actually train us to be judgmental. And then they say, don't be judgmental. And then you get confused. And you don't know what you're supposed to do. That's good, because then you can't think. You have to listen to the outside. Whereas I think what sometimes Baba says in the Murli, judge for yourself. What Baba is saying, is it right? Or what the world is saying, is it right? Judge for yourself, you see. And then the world says, if you do like this, then God will not like you. If you do this, you'll turn into a caterpillar. All these kinds of statements are there in the folklore and in the different scriptures and mythologies and different aphorisms that we hear. And there's a lot of formulas, you know. If you work hard, it means you're trying to get rid of me. Competition. Yeah. If you stay in the background, it means you're having a depression. Maybe, but not necessarily, you see. So we get into these formula, and then we look at each other in terms of these formulae, and then we even look at ourselves. We say, if I'm having a problem with Maya, it means I'm bad. No, it doesn't. If you're having a problem with Maya, it means that the drama wants you to become strong in a particular area. It means that. Each and every person has a something that is their big thing that they can't get right. It could be social anxiety, it could be status anxiety, it could be lust, it could be anger, it could be greed, it could be some form of doubt, whatever the thing is. So the most important is to identify what is the one negative emotion that stops me from being aware that I'm a world transformer, and therefore transforming myself is just an automatic byproduct of that, you see. Because whenever you have a negative emotion, like Baba said, people who cry, in today's Murli, people who cry, they're widows. Right? In other words, you think you're alone. Do you remember Daddy Jenki's last class here? She talked about this. If you have this thought that you're alone, that nobody's asking about you, nobody's thinking about you, taking care of you, it means what? It means you're stuck in sense perceptions. And you don't have any knowledge. So what we know, if it is only verifiable by frequent sense perceptions, then it means our whole sense of everything is based upon the external reality, which is what Baba calls as the deceptive, the Maya, you know. So there's also like, if again, this determination to not do that is very important. We can't have that determination until we notice whenever we're doing it. You have a thought which is connected with some old thought that you thought 25, 30 years ago, when you were in that particular mentality. It will return to plague you. And the game is of a second, yes? So that thing comes, but Baba's absolutely clear that Maya is going to come to you until the very end, relentlessly and conscientiously. And it will come in a second, and it'll be that thing, you know, that always gets you, and you have 1 second in which to tell it to get out, in which to apply your inner vision, which says, this is fake, this is not real, this is not relevant, this is just old stuff, it has nothing to do with anything, out. And that requires force, power, inner power, which is also called determination. So when you're thinking within yourself of what kind of thoughts are going on, because the mind is producing thoughts, you may say, okay, here I am, I'm sitting in meditation. You say, okay, this is Amrit Vela, it's 4 o'clock, and between 4 o'clock and 4:45, I am going to keep my mind focused in this particular manner. And then you observe where the mind goes off, for how long it takes before you notice that you're off track, that you're no longer a soul taking power from the Supreme Soul, and you're off onto some other thing, some other preoccupation. These preoccupations allow the Maya to come in the form of a moment of negative emotion. Yes? And the negative emotion can be you're attracted to someone or something. Two things, things or people. Both of them are material. Because if you're attracted to a person, it's their body. Or any attribute that's connected with their living bodily self. You see. And as soon as there's an attraction to that, you're cut from the awareness of Baba. And that is an exam. And the exam is, do you notice? How long does it take you to notice? And when you notice, what do you do? Do you announce to yourself that you have failed? Do you indulge in it for a while and then decide, well, I better not do this anymore, and then find it very difficult to get back? Or do you just cut it the moment you notice it? Because passing the exam is really that. The moment you notice it, cut it. Not allow oneself to indulge in it. Or okay, you allow yourself to indulge it for half a second. The moment you notice that you're allowing yourself to indulge in it, cut it. Because this act of cutting it is a method by which your conscience is gaining functionality. And how it lost functionality is because you bypass it. Everybody has a conscience. Everybody knows what's right or wrong. Nobody knows, nobody needs anybody to tell you what's right or wrong, because you already know, is it? Anybody not know? You know. But there's hesitation, doubt. You don't trust yourself, because there's been so much training to trust the external information or informers, and to doubt the self. This is morality. You have a preference in life, you have preferences. And someone comes along and says, that's very body conscious. Right? Have you experienced that? And then you doubt. You see. So when somebody's say so causes you to doubt, that reduces the power of your determination. Because when somebody makes a comment on you, you have 1 second in which to evaluate what exactly is going on here. You see? Is it or isn't it? If you're doing something, you would know in advance if it's body conscious. Right? You would know. You know very well what's body conscious, what's soul conscious. In your considered opinion. You see. Now some people will say, it's very body conscious to eat tomatoes. And if somebody comes along to you and says, oh, you're eating tomatoes, very body conscious. You know, do you take that in? Huh? Or do you immediately say, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, you know? Because that's really the test, isn't it? I give you a stupid example, but you will know that there are certain comments that people make about you, to you, which are specially designed to make you have doubt in yourself. It's a very common pursuit among human beings. And it's a very useful thing because it's a sudden test for you to give the response of, hey, you know, if you think so, you're welcome to your opinion. No problem, you know, this is not my problem. Thank you very much. And you maintain your considered opinion of what is right. This gives functionality to your conscience. If somebody is telling you something that is really true, you will have a different response to it. It'll be like a light goes on. And you say, yes, this is right. And it doesn't make you have doubt in yourself, but rather it makes you more clear. Have you experienced this? These are two very different things. And they're very fine differences, but we need to have an immediate and instant recognition, you see. Because as soon as we get it, that yeah, this is right, then you accept it and you apply it. And your conscience is refined, your determination is increased in its strength, and you go according to that. And also, you may get such insights from other kinds of sources. Someone may tell you something that they want you to accept to bring you under their influence. Because it is a common perception in this world that you either have people under your influence or you are under somebody's influence. Yes? And I think when Baba talks to us about mukti and jivan mukti and not being subservient, he's talking to us about a particular kind of freedom in which we want to be under the exclusive influence of God. And not under the influence of any other human being. We have to interact with each other, we have to be polite to each other, nice to each other, love each other, have good wishes and pure feelings and all of those things. But not come under somebody's influence. Because the moment you come under somebody's influence, you go into self-doubt. I see. That's the problem with coming under somebody's influence. And when you are in that, it's very, very easy for you to experience sorrow. Very easy to take sorrow. Because when you come under somebody's influence, then you want them to approve of what you're doing. And if they say anything that's even remotely disapproving, then you experience sorrow. You see? And this is because you're away from your self-respect. So this reference point, the refined and purified conscience, which is able to become like that only because of Srimad. When you follow Srimad, you do correct actions. And Srimad is be soul conscious and do actions that stem from these, what I call the five elements of the soul, love, peace, inner power, purity, and bliss. Not happiness. I say not happiness because I think that rather like morality and ethics, morality is man-made, ethics is just naturally correct. Happiness is produced by our pure actions, whereas bliss is just there. That's one of the essential states of the soul. You remember when Sri Baba first announced his arrival, he said, "I am Shiva, Shivoham Ananda Swarupam," means I am the form of bliss. So Sri Baba exists in a state of bliss. So if we want to follow the Father, it means we have to exist in a state of bliss, which is nothing to do with whether things are going right or wrong or people are good or bad. Who cares? It doesn't make any difference. So all that's just drama, wallpaper. What's important is being so connected, because until we are completely connected with the Self, we can't be connected with Baba. It's not possible. We come under somebody's influence, it disconnects us from ourself, disconnects us from Baba, and we come under somebody's influence, they pull us away from the track of Srimat. And we get under somebody's influence because of desire, attraction, or fear. Somebody can force us to do something that we know isn't right. And again, the socialization is a big one here. Because you're trained by your parents, teachers, and religious leaders to be polite. Right? And it's not polite to prevent somebody from bringing you under their influence. But it's necessary. And so you have to be so tricky to be able to maintain your independence and maintain your pursuit of the track of Srimat without antagonizing people, known as killing the snake without breaking the stick. It's a very well-known phrase that's used in India for this very delicate thing. And that some people have doubt because they're so good at making everybody feel good and being polite and nice that they think that they're fake. Huh? Have you experienced this? Some people are very, very good at it. And then everyone else thinks that their yukti is their identity. And you know it's just your yukti. Well, other people praise you for these yuktis. And sometimes you feel that you're so fake because you're so good at your yuktis. Is it? But you still have the power of discrimination that you know, this is me, this is what I am, this is my yuktis. And you don't get confused. If other people get confused, that's not your problem. You know? And it's very good to have good yuktis. But if we find ourselves getting seduced by our own yuktis, and we start to believe that ourself is our yuktis, this is where we've gone into Maya. And this is where we have not exactly come under somebody else's influence, but it's a kind of narcissism. We've fallen in love with our own yuktis and got seduced by them and lose connection with ourselves that way. You see? So it's just very, very important to always keep the Self separate from what's going on. And you have to interact with it very dispassionately in a very detached way. There's an expression that comes from Star Trek. You probably see Star Trek sometimes, or used to when it was going on. And there's an expression, make it so. You know that one? something is a good idea and then you're told, make it so. So Baba gives us directions. Make it so. Firm, determined thought. You know? There was a Murali about maybe 15 years ago, which Baba was talking about determination. And he said, you know, there'll be people who will be trying to pull you under their influence and trying to limit your freedom. And you have to free yourself from that purely by a firm, determined thought. That this is who I am, this is what I do, this is what I don't do. If you don't like it, too bad. But without any emotion. The thing that gets in the way is the emotion. You see? Because you have a right to wake up early in the morning, to meditate, to go to class, to, you know, remain single, to buy what you want and not what you don't want, and all of this kind of thing. And if somebody has any objection, and they may give you guilt trips and so many things, but you have to be able to instantly analyze the foundation of their objection. And if you find that it's selfishness, then you have to be clear about that. That this person is trying to take advantage of me for their selfish reasons. And you be very firm, very determined, and the answer is no. And this single sentence, just N-O, full stop, no. Not no because if there's any because, then they'll be able to argue with you. You see? And again, Baba has also said in this Murali that we have to be away from these excuses, these because, these reasons. It's either yes or no. If you don't have quite enough faith in yourself, you start to say because, well, you know, it is, all of that goes on. But if you're very clear about who you are and what you are, and you're using these three points that Baba had given, nimit, you're an instrument. You make it clear for yourself and you make it clear for other people that I'm an instrument of God and therefore this is how I operate. And if you don't like it, that's too bad. But it's a very delicate thing that requires a lot of humility. Because if you say, I'm an instrument of God with arrogance, then it won't work. Because it's not firm determination, but it's arrogance or anger that you're trying to use to, or as a substitute for the power of the truth, you see. I've been called by God, I'm an instrument of God, and this is what I do, and this is what I don't do. Take it or leave it. And you position yourself like that, and people gradually get used to it. You're an instrument, you're humble, and pure words. It means without the slightest bit of reactiveness, anger, arrogance. Because those things are defensive. So whenever we become defensive, it doesn't succeed. So we have to be so soft. That this is what I am, this is what I do, this is what I don't do, and that's the way it is. And that's all. Full stop. And whatever anybody says, whatever anybody tries, whether it's people from the outside or this voice inside, you know, the internalized morality, you know, things that you've been taught from outside, from these external moral authorities, the parents, the teachers, and the religious leaders, you internalize their voice, and this is a very powerful force in body consciousness to make you weak in terms of following Srimad. Because Srimad is ethics, and the internalized voice from the socialization that you get is morality. And your body conscious intellect thinks that morality is of a greater value than the truth. Because if you try to go against morality, people will guilt trip you, or you'll guilt trip yourself. And this is where the doubt comes, you see. So, the more there's bodilessness, and the more there's yoga, the more there's the power to hear the voice of the conscience and follow it. And every time you do that, you become clear, and it becomes very, very much easier that whatever is moral but not ethical, thank you very much, enjoy your morality, I'm going this way. That's it. Otherwise, they'll say, oh, what's wrong with you, you know, all this stuff. And then you become weak. So Baba had mentioned in this Murli the things that make you weak, these susceptibilities. And there, when your yoga is down, the body consciousness comes back, the clarity disappears, and instead of being with Baba, you're with Maya. And then you doubt. So, because of the sense perceptions, you listen to things, you see things, you associate with, people pull you back into the way of morality. And so you have to stay with yourself. So it's very good, I think, in Brahman life to be alone. Of course, we're with lots and lots of people. But if you're able to be alone, then whatever people's reactions are to you or around you, it doesn't actually make any difference to your stage. If your sense of self is predicated on how other people are treating you, then you're giving away your power. You're not alone, you're not detached, you're not with Baba. You see? Because we have to be in a stable stage. Being constantly with Baba is not a feeling that is an intense feeling, but it is almost imperceptible. And whenever something comes to try to pull you away from that, you have that second to keep yourself there. So you won't feel that you're there, but you'll know that you're there. And there'll be constantly something or another trying to pull you away from it. And at the moment when things want to pull you away from it, you resist that, and that is your power of determination. And the more clearly you can identify that vibration, that situation, that state, you're a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful soul, whether you can feel it or not. You see, so your knowing does the work. And you're not dependent on having feelings about it. You know it. And this gives you this added degree of the power of discernment, so that when you bend from it or break from it, the conscience will give you a little message that, hey, you're going off track, come back. And you won't feel anything until you go off track. And when you go off track even a little bit, there'll be a flutter. just a slight flutter. We have to immediately recognize that slight flutter and reposition the self. And when you do something that's totally away from that stage, the first thing you have to tell yourself is it doesn't matter. Because when you do something totally wrong, then you spend a long time feeling bad about it, and that is actually much worse than doing the wrong thing. Because doing the wrong thing is a moment. Feeling bad about it goes on for a long period of time, and the period of time that you're feeling bad about doing the wrong thing is where the energy is getting drained. You do something wrong, catch yourself, make a determination that, okay, here's a sanskar that's presenting itself, and I'm noting it, and I'm not going to do it again. I'm going to be careful. That's it. Going into being guilty, feeling bad, feeling embarrassed, all of this is the negative thoughts and the waste thoughts. So the determination also has to apply there, that the moment we experience ourselves going into feeling bad, we have to cut that. Stop it. And get back into our inner position and our inner connectedness. So I'm going to stop there because we almost at 12:30, you may have some questions. So if anybody has any question, we have a few mics here, but if you speak very loudly, yeah? Is it possible to have a microphone for questions? Yeah, we can bring you a mic because I won't be able to hear you and the other people are sitting at 2 or 3 miles away. Yeah, so you just and Suresh Bhai will give you the mic.
Yeah, when you were speaking about morality, I don't know if in the morality there is no question of morality, I guess, because God speaks. So as you said, normally it should be. But sometimes what's surprising is Baba mentioned that he would love more some serviceable children, or as if he would give more love in such and such condition. And to me it looks like a kind of morality again.
No, it's different.
Okay.
When people say, if you do this, then God will love you, that's people. If God says, I will love you more if you do service, he's speaking for himself. And he's telling you about himself, that if you want to experience that closeness, and if you want to build your this power of your connection with him, then here's a way to do it. You see? It is exactly what he says. How you take it is a different thing, you see. But the power of this, what I'm calling morality, affects your ability to hear what he says, because it's acting as a filter. And it makes you judge God on the basis of man-made morality, and that makes you distant. And so we have to be careful of that. It's very subtle and very tricky. And we have to catch it. And we have just a quarter second to do it. And what I feel, at least in my own research, is that this conscience, what I call the conscience, it gives us little flutters when we're being arrogant, when we're being soul conscious. It'll let us know. Because there's a very fine line between when you're on track and you're off track. You see, because if it was obvious, then it would be easy. It's difficult purely because it's not obvious. Yeah. And we feel that our ego is our soul. I know. So it's tricky. Because the whole thing we have to do is you can come up and speak to the mic. And you come. The big problem is, go to the mic and speak. Yeah. The problem is identifying the ego as what it is. Please.
Right. Regarding negativities.
Regarding what?
Negativities. My negativities, which you refer to as negative emotions, negative feelings. My question is, are they recorded in me as a soul? And if they are, shall I be taking them along when I go to Parumda?
Very interesting question, huh?
We've been discussing this last night with Brother Jay from South Africa and Brother Samatis from Greece. And
okay, so...
will they stay here, hanging around, waiting for me when I come down again in 5,000 years?
Thanks. I think that we need to become completely neutral regarding... Repeat the question. He is saying that he has negative emotions. Will he take them to Paramdham, or will he leave them behind here? And will they wait for him when he comes down after 5,000 years to pick up? That's a good question. So the thing is that many people... They think, okay, I have a soul, I like this big ball, you know, and half of it is a positive part and half is a negative part, and I cut it and throw away the bad part, right? Can't do that. Not possible. Soul is indivisible. The soul is golden age, silver age, copper age, iron age. Sato Pradhan, Sato Rajo, Tamo, Tamo Pradhan. We have to be absolutely neutral about our negativity. And also absolutely neutral about our positivity. So we have to come to terms, and we have to be able to see the dark side of our nature and be absolutely unmoved by it. So, okay, you have a negative emotion, you know, something comes up. And what's that? When you're body conscious, it will express itself through some negative emotion. And what you have to do is stop and become soul conscious. So negative emotion is not anything, it's just the soul being body conscious. And what you have to do is not be body conscious and become soul conscious again and again until the compulsion to be body conscious becomes less. And your nature of becoming soul conscious is more. And your divine samskaras will dominate, you see. But Maya is very tricky, and it will find a way to cut you off from your soul consciousness and make you body conscious, and you just say, not, and dot. That's also a murli like that. Not. When you're weak, you can't do it. And you say, oh, Maya comes, oh, you know. And so but when you're strong, then you have determination. Determination and being strong is the same, you see. So you get a deviation, you see, and within a nanosecond you say, up, this way. That's determination. And even if it goes all the way over here, you say, hey, come back. And this is our inner guidance of our own self. But we don't feel bad about being bad. We just stop and come back. Because that's the work. You see. So I think one thing to transform is the belief that we should feel bad about being bad, and we should feel neutral about being bad. And see it for what it is and not do it. And let it be. Who cares if I'm good or bad? Nobody. So what if it's recorded? Everything is recorded, but the thing is to be neutral about it and record the fact that you stop it. It's a good recording. You're the recorder. You have a bad emotion, stop. Come back. They're not things, you know. So they're just signs that you're not quite strong. That's all. So don't worry about them, but make yourself strong. Make your yoga such that you... I don't know if you saw, there was a very interesting movie called... of course you don't watch movies, but anyway. The Dark Crystal. It's a cartoon from about 1983 or something. I have a copy in the office. And there's a scene at the very end, and it's a very jnani, you know, because there's the kind of the evil people over here doing their evil thing, and then there's the good people who are very old and very exhausted, and they're bhagats, basically. And there's a particular point in time where everything is going to change, and they have to reach that place. So the whole movie is about this journey, and as they go along, an evil one dies, a good one dies, an evil one dies, a good one, there's very few left. And finally they reach at the end, and the evil and the good merge. There are eight, yes, that's right. And they become angels. I see. So I thought, this is a good symbol for us, because we have to take our evil and our good, which is the sort of polarized state, and make it one, like Vishnu is one. It's not a man and a woman, but they're merged. And so our evil and our good becomes merged, and then we're an integrated soul. Because the soul has the capacity for perfection and being full, like the full moon, and it also goes around the cycle and becomes empty. And we have to be quite neutral about the whole thing, so that whether we're good or bad absolutely doesn't matter. You see, in the Golden Age, our karma is called akarma. And in the Murali, Baba says, in the Iron Age, your karma becomes vikarma. Your karma in the Confluence Age becomes sukarma. And in the Golden Age, it becomes akarma. You see? So what we're looking for is neutrality. So we have to be neutral about each other. We have to be neutral about ourselves, you know. And become integrated, so that my good and my bad is the same, you know. In morality, they say that the bad is over here and good is over there, and psh, you know, you become a perfectionist, you see, and this is very unhealthy, very unspiritual. But when you become neutral about good and bad, success and failure, it works out, it doesn't work out. This is what the Gita speaks about, you know, neutrality. I am who I am, you know, Hamso Soham, I am that Brahman who becomes that deity, who becomes that silver-aged warrior who falls, you know, into body consciousness and becomes that Dwapara Yugi, Vaish, and who goes into Kali Yuga and becomes that Shudra, and then from that Shudra I become that Brahman, and then I go to become that angel, I become that dot soul, I come back and I become that deity, and this is me, take it or leave it. Because we have to come to terms with who we are. Because we are, I mean, you cannot become somebody else. And you cannot cut your soul in half and say, okay, we're going to have, instead of golden age, silver age, copper age, and iron age, we're going to have just golden age, silver age, and again, golden age, silver age, golden age, silver age. It doesn't work like that. You know? So we had to go all the way to the top and all the way to the bottom and not mind about it. And Baba said a very interesting thing in the Murli today. He said, if anybody does anything good, Baba did it. Do you notice that? If anything good, if anybody gets impressed by anything you say, you didn't do it, Baba did it. Is it true or not? He says it's true. It's probably true. You know? So if we think that what he did, we did, and what we did, we didn't do, then we're out of touch with ourselves. So we have to know, who am I, and who is he, and let him use us, give credit where it's due, and get on with the business of integrating ourselves with ourselves so that we become whole. That I am this 84 birth soul, I go to heaven, I go to hell, and I'm equal about the both of them. I'm not trying to prove anything, not trying to disprove anything. This is me, take it or leave it. If you don't like me, you know, it's okay, not my problem. Yeah? But morality says, no, you have to get approval of this and approval of that and approval of the other, and you have to look like this and act like that and all of this stuff. And then you distort yourself in order to get certain approvals, and you lose time. Because you're not doing the real work of getting the power to integrate yourself and become a single whole. Rather like, I suppose, you know, the light on a rainbow is the 7 colors, and when you mix them all up, it's just white light. And so a soul with its golden, silver, copper and iron age and confluence age, mix it all up and it becomes just a point of light. And I'm a point of light, good one, bad one, it's not like that. You're just a point of light which has all the best and all the worst, and this is human life. And I'm a human being. And I think when you come to terms with this, these polarities and with all of these variations that take place within yourself, then you can become stable and neutral. And then you're not fighting against what you perceive to be bad. I think that may be an attribute of a what we call a Silver Age soul, whereas Golden Age soul, not fighting, you know. You're consolidated, you're whole, integrated, this is it, this is me, that's it. Very pliable. Acha, Om Shanti.